Welcome back to Listen in Wonder. In season one, we explored the many ways God speaks to us through whispers, scripture, prayer, and unexpected moments that remind us He's near. This season, we're turning our attention to a theme that touches every one of us at some point in life, God's presence in our suffering. Suffering is never easy, whether it's physical, emotional, mental, or spiritual. But in the middle of pain and questions, we believe God's presence surrounds us, holds us, and even transforms us. This season, we'll listen to real stories from women who've walked through seasons of suffering. We'll ask them, what was helpful, what wasn't? How did God meet them in their pain? And how did community play a role in reminding them they weren't alone? Our hope is that these conversations will meet you right where you are, offering comfort, courage, and confidence, no matter the circumstances. You are surrounded by wonder.
Well, it's Wonder Wednesday. We are a couple of weeks past Wonder Conference, and goodness, I think I can speak for a lot of women who would say those Wonder Conference days are truly special, and how the Lord, in words we can't express, knows every heart in the room, knows her story, knows what is going on in her life, and He holds us. He just holds us tenderly in His hands. And so we're just grateful for who He is. And I am grateful to share another really precious, hard, but also beautiful story with you all of a woman from our North Richland Hills campus. I'll tell you her name in just a minute. Although at this point, you can see it on the podcast title. So I don't know why I say that every week. But I met this person probably a year or so ago, because Jamie actually said, Barbara, you really need to meet her. She has an amazing story, and the faithfulness of God is stamped on her life. And so y'all know I go to lunch a lot because I talk about it on the podcast, but I asked her to lunch and was in awe of her story. Just how beautifully she articulated it to me, something that felt really unimaginable. We're going to talk about church hurt today. That's a little bit of a disclaimer. It's hard to say that sometimes we are hurt by the church, and yet the church is made up of broken people. And so church hurt is a real thing. And I'm just honored that she would share her story. So without any more from me, welcome Lynn Gentry.
Thank you, Barbara. It is always a pleasure to be with you.
Did you know our lunch was going to be so fun when I asked you?
I didn't know it was going to be 2 hours. But yes, I could see you from afar, and I knew you were a fun person. Mm-hmm. And I think you're right where God wants you to be.
It's so sweet. And I'm so grateful that the Lord brought you and your husband to the hills. So will you tell us a little bit, like, what's going on in the Gentry home this week? What does life look like right now?
Well, life, you know, we're retired, or we should be, but we're both still working full time, and it's busier than ever. And it is exactly how I love life to be. It's filled with people and our grandchildren. Mm. And
where all do your grandchildren live?
Well, we have 3 in Colleyville.
Okay, that's right. I knew that.
And 3 in Memphis.
Okay, that's right. Okay.
So there's 6 of them, and they can really double team us.
Triple team you, it sounds like.
Yes,
what
yes.
are their ages?
11 to 5.
Oh,
they're
stair
stepped. 11, 10, 9, 8, then 6 and 5.
Do they get so excited when all the cousins get together?
Yes. Once a year, I have cousin camp, and they love it, and it is exhausting, and it is my absolute favorite time of year.
Okay, we have not talked about this, but do you have, like, one tip for those of us that are not grandparents yet or maybe new to that world? What is, like, one tip you would give us about a successful cousin camp? What makes
rest up.
Rest up beforehand.
Yes, I love eat that. Your Wheaties. You're going to need them.
That is so fun.
Yes.
That is so fun. Well, it's so funny to say we're both retired, but we're both working full time. So unpack that.
Well, we were in ministry for 30 years.
Okay.
And then church hurt removed us from ministry.
Okay.
And my husband went to work for Baylor Scott & White, so he's still working for them. He went back and got a doctorate in bioethics.
Oh, wow.
And I'm writing, and I'll probably be writing until they pry the computer out of my cold, dead hands.
What kinds of books? What genre of books do you write?
I mostly write fiction, mm-hmm. but I ghostwrite, okay. and so I've written a lot of nonfiction in all different genres. But my fiction genres are small town humor, mm-hmm. southern small town humor, medical thrillers, and time travel.
So fun. Okay, I'm admitting to you right now, I have not read one of your books.
Okay, then I guess we're done here.
After, yeah. All right. We're moving on to next week's guest. Just kidding. Yes. After Wonder, I'm going to have to do that.
Oh, well, yeah, you probably need to put your feet up.
I do. I do take some time off, and I travel a little bit.
Good.
And I read more for pleasure than for, you know, I'm studying for something. So, okay, what's the first book I need to read?
Well,
I like all those genres, so that's going to be hard for me to.
Well, the book that kind of launched me is about a small town pastor's wife whose husband dies in the pulpit, and then the church doesn't really react. I wrote this probably with a little bit of hurt in me still. So. You know, I've had people say, you need therapy. And I'm thinking, yeah, I probably do.
So what's the title of this book?
Walking Shoes.
Walking Shoes. Okay. Okay. You hold me accountable. I'm going to read Walking Shoes after conference.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. So we're going to get to all of this. I promise we're going to unpack Lynn's story with you all. Let's go back a little.
Okay.
I started to ask you a question about, but no, let's go back a little to Lynn Gentry as a little girl.
Lynn Gentry as a little girl was too much. I have a big personality. Mm-hmm. I love.
Did somebody tell you you were too much? Is it just a feeling that you got? I mean, I don't think you're too much. I'm just want to.
They told me. Mm. That I was too much. Lynn, be quiet. Mm. Lynn, settle down. Lynn, hush. Mm. It was.
And where are you in birth order?
I'm oldest.
You're oldest of how many?
Four.
Okay.
And I was conceived out of wedlock.
Okay.
My mother was a very strong, staunch Mennonite girl. Mm. And my dad was a very strong Christian church boy.
Okay.
And so. Mm. When my mother got pregnant, mm-hmm. it was shameful, mm-hmm. very shameful. And you know what's so strange is I didn't figure all this out until my mother died. I don't know why.
Wow.
I never did the math about when I was conceived and when I was born. But because of that, they always held me at arm's length.
Mm-hmm.
And it started this lie in my head that if I could just be perfect, mm-hmm. if I could dial everything down mm-hmm. and not be this person that was just aching to bust out mm-hmm. of me, mm-hmm. if I could dial it down, mm-hmm. then they would love me.
Mm-hmm.
If I could just do everything perfectly. And that really set me on a course that was bound for collision with reality.
Yeah.
Because you can't be perfect.
Nope.
Your whole life.
Nope. And every time you're not perfect, you know, that the enemy can really.
Yeah. The lie comes back. See, I told you.
Yeah.
I told you were not enough.
Oh, that's so hard.
Yeah.
Do you have a relationship with your siblings today?
Well, church hurt.
Yeah.
Not only destroyed the occupation that we had devoted 30 years to, it mm-hmm. destroyed my family.
Mm.
And so I have connection with one sister,
okay,
but not my brother or my youngest sister, unfortunately.
Mm. And the sister that you're connected with, where does she live?
She lives in Houston, and her husband's a worship minister.
Okay. Okay. Mm. Well, yeah. Still parts of your story that are hard.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, the church hurt. What I did is in an effort to be perfect mm-hmm. when I married a pastor.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was going to ask you, where did y'all meet?
We met at Oklahoma Christian. Maiden capital of the world, you know.
Where, Lonnie Gentry.
Yes, Lonnie Gentry.
We're all the same class in
no,
school?
No, he was a year older.
Okay.
And he was going to save the world, and I was up for that. I wanted to be, I wanted God to love me. Mm-hmm. And I felt like throwing myself into ministry, being the best preacher's wife I could ever be would make God love me, because I equated him a lot with my parents, with my story origin. And so we got married, and my husband went to grad school. I worked as a legal secretary, putting him through school. And then we trudged off on our first job. And of course, back in the day, they didn't pay ministers.
I was going to say, where was his first job?
The first job was in Oklahoma City.
Do you remember the ballpark salary?
I think it was probably in the $20,000 a year. I mean, we were living in high cotton then, right?
I mean, I'm saying, yeah.
Yeah, we owed 30 grand on his grad school, and we were making 20. So, you know, we had a new baby. So it was tight.
Yeah, for sure.
But then we moved to Georgia, South Georgia.
Okay.
And
wow, that's a big move.
It was a big move. It was.
Especially back then.
Especially back then. But it was wonderful.
Yeah.
It was a wonderful time. They had a church parsonage.
Oh.
And so these two broke kids could live in this house.
Look at that. The Lord.
Yes. Look at that.
Leaving his faithfulness all throughout your story.
Yeah, exactly. And so we lived there 8 years, which was wonderful because it gave us time to grow up.
Mm-hmm.
But we grew up in a family of love. Mm-hmm. And the people were so good to us. And we probably could have stayed in South Georgia for the rest of our ministry, but we were so far from our physical families that we wanted to come back. And so when my husband got the opportunity to move to San Antonio to a way bigger church and a little bit better salary, we had to pay our medical insurance. There wasn't retirement. I mean, it was still really tough, but it was wonderful too. Mm-hmm. A really wonderful time. And then we, by this time, my husband's making a little bit of a name for himself. Mm-hmm. And I am too, because I have a theater background and a church in the Metroplex hired us to come and help them transition from being a non-instrumental church to an instrumental church. And they also had a huge core of people, 100 people that could sing, act, and dance, because Dallas is a major talent hub.
Yeah. Wow.
And so they wanted my ability to direct and write musicals. Mm. And that's what I brought to the table. They didn't want to pay me, but they wanted that skill.
Two for the price of one, baby.
Mm-hmm. But we should have known from the minute we walked through that door that either A, we hadn't heard the Lord correctly, or this was going to be a different run for our money.
Yeah.
And I knew that the first week, because I was standing in a group of women, and it's, as you and I are talking, you can see me using my hands. I wish everybody else could too.
And I was
just imagine my hands flying around, and I'm using my hands, and this woman reaches across the circle, and she takes my hand with my wedding ring on it, and she looks at my diamond, and she goes, "Huh." And I didn't know if she meant, "Huh, it's too big," or "Huh,
it's too small.
Later on, I would know she meant it was way too small. But anyway, from then, we should have known then. The elders had hired us without a search committee or without us coming in to try out. Mm. They just said—
That's unusual.
We should have known better.
Yeah. Except I'm also wondering, Lynn, like, I think you and Lonnie— could have fully heard the voice of the Lord to come, and somebody here wasn't fully listening.
I agree. And Rick.
Or vice versa. I mean, we all like have those moments where we need to be better listeners. But
Rick and Jamie have been really good friends to us. And Rick said something that never crossed my mind before, because when it all went south and ended very badly, I assumed it was our fault. Mm-hmm. And my husband and I played the shame and blame game for
what if we had done this? Yeah. What if we had done that?
Yeah. And why weren't you better? Why'd you get mean? Or why didn't you say this? Or did you really have to preach on that? Mm-hmm. You know, and things like that. And it that shame and blame game nearly destroyed our marriage. Wow. But Rick said something interesting. He said, "You didn't fail the church. Mm-hmm. The church failed you." Mm-hmm. And backing that up, it was a recipe for disaster. Mm-hmm. We didn't know at the time because we didn't understand the demographics mm-hmm. of the Metroplex mm-hmm. that we had moved to an area that was under significant white flight. Mm-hmm. And so in our first year, we lost 23 families.
Wow.
And they moved north mm-hmm. and they took their money with them. Mm-hmm. And it was, I mean, you could have shot a cannon off in our auditorium and not hit anybody. I mean, it just really gutted us.
So what year is this? Like, what year is this? How old are you guys? How many kids do you have when you
it's
move
in,
here?
It's in 2000.
Okay, in the year 2000. Which is a lot farther back than most of us want to admit.
Yes. we had two kids. Our daughter was going into, she was a junior, and our son was in eighth grade. And so we managed to limp by for mm-hmm. the first 2 years. But people were dropping like flies and leaving, and it was very discouraging, but my husband is, I can turn this ship around. Mm-hmm. We were both very self-sufficient.
Yeah.
And
high capacity.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Really high functioning, hard workers. We're in our 40s at the time. And we're limping along. Mm-hmm. And to keep the church from going under, fortunately, everything was paid for. The building was paid for. But mm-hmm. we had to cut staff. And whenever you cut staff, you are cutting off your foot because someone loved them and you also needed them.
Right. They were doing something.
They were doing something. And mm-hmm. so there's this hole. So I'm working even more for free at the church. And then my husband, I feel, heard from the Lord that the only way to save this church was to move it to Midlothian, to another community. Okay. And, okay, if you want to lose your job as a minister, try to move a church that's been in the same place for 150 years. And there was all kinds of opposition to that. And in the process of...
is there any decision made without opposition? No. I'm not just speaking in the church, but I'm like, is there any?
Yeah. No, no, not really. But this one was fighting words. Mm-hmm. Not only were we fighting the worship wars, bringing the church up to speed, trying to get a broader sense of women's roles and music.
Lots more, of changes.
Yes. And both of my husband and I both were perfectionists. We wanted things done well. Everything. We didn't want to just wait till the last minute. We wanted things done well in a plan. So
in my own life, I will tell you, I don't like change.
Yeah.
But on the other side of change, I am 99% of the time like, this is better. And so what I can say in my own life, looking back, is that change is what has promoted growth.
Absolutely.
And without the change, I wouldn't grow.
Right. Well, you are probably 99% of people don't like change, especially when people would say things like, I got married in this building.
Sure.
I buried my husband in this building. And it was very emotional for them.
Yes.
Although they had moved out of the community. Mm. They had moved south. That's the reason we were moving the church out. And so...
And that's when you have to, like, do you just, like, pause and not respond when those... Because you're... Well, the church is not the building. The church is the people.
Well, I think, in hindsight, I think their sadness wasn't necessarily the building. The sadness was the friends who had already left.
But the argument could be over the building.
Right.
Yeah.
We caught the brunt of it because, frankly, we'd only been in town a couple of years. We didn't have any skin in the game of staying in that location. Yeah. The building needed repairs. Mm-hmm. It was old. Mm-hmm. And it was beyond what that church could sustain. Mm-hmm. In fact, we had to close down the auditorium because of how much it cost to run the auditorium. Mm-hmm. And we were meeting in the new Family Life Center. And that caused a big hubbub because everybody had their favorite seat to sit in and all that. And so
we get so territorial.
I know. So it was, you know, we did everything we could to try to stay afloat. Sure. And like I said, what saved us was that the building was paid for. Well, then that started the process of looking for land. Land was found. We were able to purchase it. We sold the building and had to meet in a school for several months, maybe almost a year, while the new building was being built. Mm-hmm. But by the time we managed to move that whole congregation, there weren't very many left. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We had started at about 750 and we were down to 200.
Wow.
And it was exhausting setting up and tearing down every week in a school. Mm-hmm. And we were about to lose those people, those faithful that had stuck with it. But what's ironic is and so surprising about this trauma is during that time, we really bonded with those people. Mm-hmm. I mean, those people go up to the building and paint.
When you serve alongside of people, like this was not planned, but it is a little plug for serving. If you're not serving, let's have a conversation. Yeah. When you're serving alongside of people, you get to know them differently. Yes,
you do. And it's just doing a service project is actually more for you than the people you're serving.
Right.
Because you do get to know people. You laugh together. Mm-hmm. You're exhausted together. Yeah. And then that sets you up to cry together. Mm-hmm. And I had cried and laughed with these people. Mm-hmm. And our families all still lived far away. Mm-hmm. So I had made these people my family.
Sure.
And so we finally get in the new building. Mm-hmm. And we think all...
Like how many years... So you were in the elementary school for a couple of years?
A year. So it's...
But you've already been through the hard years at the old building, a year at the elementary school. Now you're stepping into the new building.
So it's about 2007. Mm-hmm. And so we're seeing the light at the end of the tunnel.
Right. And there's some excitement there.
Yes, lots of excitement. Mm-hmm. And at the time, that corridor down there on 287 was predicted to just explode. Mm-hmm. But the 2008 downturn in the economy tanked that possibility.
Yeah.
So we were still struggling a little bit. Mm-hmm. And now we had a building payment.
Yeah.
Oh. And then my mother gets cancer. Mm. And so
remind me what kind of cancer she had.
She had breast cancer, inflammatory breast cancer. It was very aggressive. But my mother lived in Kansas. Mm-hmm. I had kids here and finishing up high school, going into college. I am working full time at the church.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to manage my mother's health care. Mm. And I am exhausted. And we're still doing these massive shows. And
which that takes a lot.
Yeah. It, you know, I'm a creative. I'm not a detail person, and you don't do a massive show without the details. Mm-hmm. And so I can do it, but it nearly kills me. Mm-hmm. And so when you move a church, we've come to find out, you burn a lot of points. Mm-hmm. And we were burning points with the leadership. There was a dust up over the size of the parking lot. One elder thought the parking lot should be bigger. And my husband's crunching the numbers saying, we don't have room to pour concrete for one more car.
Yeah.
We got what we got.
Yeah.
And dust up over colors in the building and stupid stuff.
I mean, it just reminds me that we do have an enemy and his main focus is to kill, steal, and destroy. And so he can get us fixated on one parking lot or a paint color.
Right.
If it means they're not focused on the main thing here, you know.
Yeah. And but what really Satan is so crafty. Mm-hmm. So we're exhausted and we're not at our best. Mm-hmm.
And what kind of prognosis has your mom been given? Like,
it's terminal.
Right.
Terminal.
So she's like immediately in treatment, right. Immediately not feeling well.
And she has several surgeries. Mm. And I have to be there.
Of course.
She can't. I have siblings and we take turns. At the time, our sibling, we had a fabulous sibling connection. Mm. And there were four of us, so we could each do a week every month. Wow. And yeah, but I have to drive 7 hours to go take care of her. Mm-hmm. And as the oldest, managing her health care mm-hmm. fell to me. And she never would admit she was dying. Mm-hmm. And so no decisions were made about that.
Was she a strong believer at that time? Like, very. Was she very much like, I know where I'm, like.
Yes, very strong believer. Mm-hmm. But she too was perfection oriented and mm-hmm. never really trusted her salvation. And mm-hmm. had she done enough? And I'm thinking, mm-hmm. oh my goodness, I don't want to live like that. Mm-hmm. But I was living like that. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of our family obligations fell to my husband, who's trying to get this church mm-hmm. back on its feet. Mm-hmm. And the eldership, a man came to our church who was charismatic, very soft-spoken and whispering in their ears, I would be a better preacher. And he started teaching a class, and I would be a better preacher. Well, if I was the preacher, I would do this.
Wow.
Could almost hear mm-hmm. him slithering around. And we're exhausted. We're not responding as wisely or kindly mm-hmm. as we could have. And then one night, the shoe just dropped, and they called my husband and I into the office. And I remember sitting there knowing this is not good. Mm-hmm. The faces.
Yeah, this is not a normal like rhythm meeting.
No.
Yeah.
The faces of these men are not the faces I have served with for nearly 9 years. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, well, maybe they're going to send us on a cruise to Alaska.
They're going to send us on a sabbatical.
Yeah. Instead, they say.
Oh, they sent you on a sabbatical.
Yeah. Permanent sabbatical. They say, you're done. This is on a Wednesday night, back when we still had church on Wednesday night. And
did they call you in before church or after church?
Before church.
Okay.
Before church. You're done. And if you want any severance, you will walk out the stores. You will not say a word. And you will have your stuff out of here by tomorrow.
And we don't need you for Wednesday night service, probably. No.
Yeah. And we said, well, what are you going to tell? I taught drama classes on Wednesday mm-hmm. night, mm-hmm. and my husband taught a class. What are you going to tell them? And they said, don't you worry about it. And then,
what'd y'all do? Like, it was just that fast. It was, they called you in. It was that fast. There's no,
No. And we're just in shock, just total shock. And I remember one of the elders was so mad because my husband probably said, what are you doing? People are going to be so confused. What are you? One of the elders got up and left. And I remember him sticking his head back in the door of the mm-hmm. office. And he looked like someone I did not know. Mm. And he said, get your stuff out of here by tomorrow. And that was that. It was done.
And y'all just got up and walked out?
Yes. And
How many years total? So you moved to this church in 2000.
It was 2009, September.
So nine years.
Yeah, September 2009. September 9th, 2009. Yeah. And
mm-hmm.
Were so shocked and just flabbergasted.
What was the car ride home like?
Tears. All I could do was cry. But what was so sad is by this time we had gotten up the attendance to over 500, so much so mm-hmm. that we were thinking of, if this keeps going at this pace, we're going to have to do two services.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, your mind is in a totally different place. Yeah.
And my mom's dying, and I'm, you know, we're just, my mom had died actually. And I didn't have time to grieve because she died after Thanksgiving, mm-hmm. but I had to bury her and come right back because the final rehearsals for the Christmas show were up. And so I didn't even get to cry about that. I had church work mm-hmm. to do. Mm-hmm. And so I'm thinking, well, when we get home and people hear about this, there are going to be so many people at our door.
They're going to be lined up.
They're going to be lined up, and those elders are going to be so sorry. And guess who came? Nobody.
Nobody came.
No.
Nobody called.
No.
Nobody texted.
No. And
nobody wrote a handwritten card that you get in your mailbox days later, no. weeks later,
no.
months later.
Nothing.
What in the world?
It was crickets. And I heard that horrible little voice in my head again. See, I told you you were not enough. And it put me on the couch, Barbara.
And how old are your kids?
Well, I think our daughter's in med school, I think, and our son's in grad school.
Okay, so y'all are empty nesters.
Yes.
When this happens.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, Thursday morning, you don't have anywhere.
We don't have any money.
Yeah, and I was about to say, you don't have anywhere to be, but also you don't have any money.
Because when it was all said and done, we did not get one penny severance. After 9 years, not one penny. They didn't even pay us for the back vacation we never took. We didn't take vacation after the first 2 years.
What did you do? Like, what did you?
Well, fortunately, my husband can squeeze a dollar out of a nickel. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And even on our very thin salary over the years, he had managed to save some money. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so we were penalized for tapping it because it was set up for retirement. But we had no choice. Yeah. And then we decided to plant a church.
Okay, hold on. You've told me how hard it was in those days to even get up in the morning.
Yeah.
So can you tell us a little bit, like, day after day, you're waking up and going, this is still our reality.
Yes.
Like, what was going on in your heart?
My heart was broken. I was so shame-filled that we had gotten fired. Mm-hmm. And the way it happened, and my husband was 50 by this time. I'm 49. And the way it happened, we knew it would be very difficult for him to get a ministry job. Mm-hmm. And with our kids in college, we couldn't take a job again that was paying 20 grand.
Yeah.
We couldn't go to West Texas and work in a church of 30. Mm-hmm. We needed a job.
Yeah.
And, you know, his resume wouldn't even get a response. And we were in serious, it was serious.
Well, yeah, because you're at the peak of like financial stress on a family, if you will. And I say that in a, not in a bad way, but like at the peak of some things that, you know, at your age and your place in your career and where your kids are in college, and you're like, you're not over the peak yet in what is a financial responsibility of a family.
There was nowhere to cut back.
Yeah.
We still had a house payment and we tried to dump the house, but keep in mind that in 2009, houses still weren't selling. And I remember the realtor telling us, well, it's a nice house. I might be able to sell it, but you're going to have to take 25 grand to closing. Mm-mm. And we were like, we don't have 25.
Let me go back to bed and pull the covers over my head and pretend like none of this is happening.
And Barbara, for someone who had never really had much empathy for people who suffer with depression, it waylaid me.
Yeah.
It put me on the couch. I could not get up. I couldn't shower. I couldn't think. All I could do was cry.
I think that is pretty profound what you just said.
Yeah. All I could do was cry.
Yeah.
And still, I kept thinking, any day, all those people I served with.
Did you ever like reach out to any of them?
No, we did not, for two reasons. One, we did not want to have any part in destroying a church we had worked so hard to build up. Mm-hmm. And it was still fragile.
Yeah.
And we knew all it would take is for us to start mm-hmm. bad mouthing mm-hmm. and we could split that church mm-hmm. down the middle.
Yeah.
And we just couldn't do it.
That is very mature and wise and takes a lot of humility.
It was hard. It was hard. I remember running into a lady in the grocery store, an older woman, and she said she wouldn't hardly speak to me. And I finally went up to her and she said, well, I just can't believe you and Lonnie would leave us right when we needed you the most. And I said, I'm sorry. I wanted to tell her, hey, we didn't leave you. By the way,
let me tell you, for the record,
anything
that starts with "for the record" is probably not going to end well.
But I couldn't say anything. I just kept saying, I'm so sorry. Mm-hmm. I'm so sorry. And I just ran out of the store crying. And
I'm like, Lynn, like this whole year at, you know, for Wonder Prep and the panel and the podcast and all the things is this remembrance of the Lord surrounding his people. Both now and forevermore, for you to be able to stand in that grocery store and to say, I'm sorry. The only explanation is that there is the Lord is surrounding you.
Absolutely. And that is where the beauty of this story takes a huge plot twist.
Yeah.
And we'll get to that. But another reason we didn't speak out is we were threatened that we would lose our severance if we said anything other than we resigned.
But then you never got it anyway.
I know. I know. And I never got my due. I never got to say. But, you know.
I am the nicest, kindest person. I just want you to know. I know this about myself. I'm pretty nice. I'm pretty kind. Until injustice happens and then something different happens inside of me. It's a good thing that I didn't know you then. I've been like, no, I'm kidding.
Well, that's where the Lord really stepped in. Mm-hmm. He sent people to me that could empathize on a ministry level. Mm-hmm. And he sent that person to me in the form of a blind woman.
Oh, wow.
She was our keynote speaker at a pregnancy crisis dinner our church hosted in the new building. Uh-huh. And I loved her instantly. Her name was Gail McWilliams, and she was a force to be reckoned with. But she and her husband had to leave ministry at the peak of their ministry years because she lost her eyesight. She lost her eyesight because she would not abort her second child.
Okay.
She had diabetes and they warned her.
Yeah.
And it made it very difficult for her to be the preacher's wife anymore because she couldn't see. And it also took a lot of work on her husband's part to raise their small children.
To care for her and their family.
For her as she was adjusting to being blind. Because she was like me. She was like, nobody messed with Gail. She was a get her done kind of girl. Mm-hmm. Well, Gail understood the ministry loss.
Yeah.
But she had moved on and she'd become an international speaker for the Right to Life. And she lived only 10 minutes away.
Yeah.
And she said, tell me where they live. I'll get my keys. I'll drive over there. I'm like, drive, Gail. And she said, we'll go egg their house. I mean, she would hear the story over and over and over again. And finally, one day, she had had enough. And I think she had not had enough of hearing my brokenness. What she had had enough of is me refusing to see any way out. And she said, Lynn, I just want to know, are you stuck or are you strategically positioned? And I'm laying on the couch and I'm thinking, I don't even know what that means. Gail, what does that even mean? She said, open your eyes. Are you finally at a place where God can use you? Now, when you figure that out, you call me back.
Wow.
Click.
Somebody who is physically blind.
Yes.
Is giving you spiritual sight.
She could see what I could not. And that was a way and a future, a hope and a future. God had a hope and a future.
So I'm just curious what Lynn's inner dialogue was. Have you're driving home from Gail's, like, am I stuck? Am I strategic? What is that? Like, What were you?
No, I
knew
I was stuck. Mm-hmm. I knew I was stuck, and so I got up off the couch, and I took a shower for the first time in days, mm-hmm. which was huge. And then I did what I didn't know I could do. Mm-hmm. I sat down, I opened my computer, and I started writing. And I wrote and wrote and wrote.
You've never been a writer up until, I mean, you've been a creative, but, and you've written like,
I'd written
plays
musicals
and stuff, but
like, I'd never written fiction.
Yeah.
And I started writing, and I just wrote and wrote and wrote, and I wrote something so above my pay grade. It was an idea I'd had for years, but I didn't know what to do with it. And
also you were too busy. You didn't have the margin
to. Yeah, I didn't have time to write. I was doing church work 60 hours a week, you know, mm-hmm. and raising kids. Mm-hmm. And
taking care of your mom. Yep.
Yeah, and taking care of my mother.
All of a sudden, you have all of this time on your hands.
Free time on my hands. And so, you know, in my writing, I could kill people if I wanted to. Mm-hmm. And so I killed a few key people off.
Something tells me that was a little helpful to you.
Yes, it was very cathartic. But what was so beautiful about that is I got an agent, mm-hmm. and then
how does one even, like, is it somebody that you knew? You just wrote a book and had an agent. How did you meet your agent?
Well, it sounds like overnight success, but it wasn't. I had to pitch mm-hmm. to agents, and you got a lot of no's, but I finally got one that said, I think
people
I can.
People need to hear that.
I
whether
got
it's writing
one,
a book.
Yes.
Or trying something new, looking for a job, looking for somebody that maybe the desire of their heart is to find the person that they're going to live with forever and do the good, hard stuff, actually.
Yeah.
I think, you know. A lot of no's before
yes.
you had the yes.
A lot of no's. Mm-hmm. What I didn't realize is that actually my childhood had prepared me for those no's. I grew up on a farm. Mm-hmm. We worked hard. Mm-hmm. I worked because I thought work would make my parents love me. Mm. And so I was a workhorse. I could write 18 hours a day, and I did. And those 5 books sold to Simon & Schuster.
Wow.
They're the big boys.
Okay. I told you this morning I was going to ask you, how old were you when your first book was published?
I was 52 when my first book came out. And,
this whole career that you could have never imagined.
I wouldn't have.
And for sure didn't imagine it on those days you were on the couch, not showering.
No, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. How many books have you written total?
Well, probably 25 plus. And I've done a lot of ghostwriting for some really big names and enjoyed that. Nonfiction. I've written a whole bunch of stuff. I was the content writer for a major Christian radio broadcasting company for years. I wrote their daily content.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
So this contract for the 5 books.
Yes.
That was the first thing that came in for you guys income-wise?
Well, no. We started to plant a church.
Okay.
And we gave that a go for 3 years. Okay. And we did raise support. Mm-hmm. The problem was, is our contacts were very conservative church members. And we were going to be a more progressive church.
Yeah.
So a lot of our good friends and stuff were reluctant to support us. But we found support. Mm-hmm. We just didn't have deep enough pockets to make it last and work. And
so the Lord sustained you in between.
Yes. But my husband went to work for Baylor Scott & White.
Okay.
And in that time, he went back to school and got a doctorate in bioethics. Mm. So,
you guys, it's never too late.
No. He was saying, oh, if I go back to college, I'm going to be so old. I said, you're going to be old anyway.
Yeah.
You might as well have a doctorate. Yeah. And it's paid off. I mean, that's been good. So he got some income. It was about first year teacher level income when he first started, but he climbed up in Baylor, and that's helped. But yes, I sold those books to Simon & Schuster, and that helped. And I've gone on to sell other books and almost 250,000 books.
Amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. That I never would have even written had this not happened.
Right.
You're right.
Wow. And you guys.
Yeah.
I don't know what hard thing you're sitting in right now.
Yes.
Some hard thing that you think it's always going to be this way, or I don't see a way out. I hope that, well, one reason I wanted Lynn to tell her story is because I believe that her story carries hope.
Yes. Oh, please hear that. Mm-hmm. Please hear beyond the church hurt. Mm-hmm. And, you know, before I came to this interview, I was thinking, I don't really remember the details. Mm-hmm. Just very, I don't remember who said what or who did mm-hmm. what or, yeah. you know. And I think that is God's gracious yeah, gift to me.
Because that wouldn't be helpful.
No, it wouldn't. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't be helpful.
And you could have stayed stuck in that, Lynn, and not written a single book.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I could have gone to work at a retail store. Mm-hmm. The bad thing about, well, no, the good thing about 30 years of church work, I had not been in the workforce. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I mean, other than teaching the two-year-olds and running ladies' ministry, which mm-hmm. I wouldn't have your job for the world now. Thank you very much. I did it for 30. Other than that, I had Zippo experience that would translate to the workforce. Mm-hmm. I couldn't get a job. Mm-hmm. And so I had no choice mm-hmm. but to give this writing thing mm-hmm. a go.
Mm-hmm. And when you pour your life, everything in you into a work that is all of a sudden over, the only thing left is the Lord.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because there is something interesting to me that I saw in Exodus 24 through 26 in my Bible study not long ago is when the Israelites mm-hmm. were captive mm-hmm. and in terrible circumstances. Mm-hmm. They also were acquiring the skills mm-hmm. they need in the next phase of their mm-hmm. journey. All those years mm-hmm. of running ministries on a shoestring, mm-hmm. having to use my creativity, yeah. All those years, all the years on the farm, mm-hmm. all of that mm-hmm. paid off. Those were skills.
Yeah.
I was acquiring, because writing, it's hard. Mm-hmm. It's lonely. It's hard. And I needed those skills.
Yeah. Well, and it's, as an author, like thinking about God being the best author and that there are chapters he hasn't written yet. Oh.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, he knows. He knows where they're going. But yeah.
He knows. Hmm. He knows those chapters that have yet to be written. And I'm so excited about them.
Yeah.
And what's funny is sometimes in ministry, I would think, what if the worst thing happened? And mm-hmm. that's where one of my first books came from is mm-hmm. Walking Shoes actually came from what if the worst thing happened? And then mm-hmm. that was my husband dying. We were living in a parsonage, 24 hours from mm-hmm. home. Mm-hmm. I had two little kids, no money. The worst thing happened. And what I see through God's goodness is when the worst thing happens, mm-hmm. whatever your worst thing is,
yeah,
he's there.
That's right. He's still there.
Mm-hmm. He's there. Mm-hmm. He was on the couch with me.
Yeah, absolutely. And at the grocery store.
And at the grocery store. He was there. And he was, you know what? I know that because a few weeks ago, I was asked to Zoom in on a book club in mm-hmm. On the East Coast. And they were going to do one of the books. Well, the first book that came out was Simon & Schuster. And I thought, you know, that was so many years ago. I need to look at that book.
I might need to read it. Remember?
I might need to remember who some of the people were in the book, because uh-huh, I'm sure they're going to ask uh-huh, me. Uh-huh. And I was reading through it, just skimming it. And I would come across lines mm-hmm. that I would think, oh my goodness, yeah. that is so good. Did I write that? Mm. And I know, Barbara, without a doubt, I did not.
Yeah. Yeah. The Spirit
in you. I did not write that. Mm-hmm. God wrote that.
That's so precious.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. Well, how did y'all end up at the Hills then?
Well, we've known Rick for, all the years we were back in the Metroplex.
Okay.
And, but how we ended up in the Hills is we moved our daughter moved to Colleyville, and so we moved over here.
Okay.
And you're 2 minutes. The Hills building is 2 minutes from our house. And so we started coming here. And
what was it like for the first time you're walking into a new church? Are you guarded?
Oh, yeah. We had serious PTSD because, frankly, we quit going to church. And it was just too hard. We had started back to the church at the branch, but we weren't, I wouldn't say you would count us great church members. We didn't do anything.
Scoot in, scoot out.
Yep. Faster the better. And so we walk in the hills, and it is everything we were dreaming of. It is everything we were working toward. Women on the stage, so much life, so much energy. So just the freedom of worship, and the music is spectacular, and everything is done to excellence.
Did you just sit there and cry the first time you were sitting in the auditorium?
We sat there and cried for a year.
A year.
And I'm telling you, Barbara, my first week, I mean, my first time to come to Wonder Conference, I tapped an old college friend. I didn't really know anybody here. And I made her come with me because I didn't want to come by myself. I literally sat there and wept through the whole entire day. Just cried. Tears of loss, tears of gratitude, tears of hope, tears of redemption. All of it. Just tears of happiness.
You know, every year I feel like the Lord downloads to me and to my team just because he knows the hearts that are going to be in the room. And it's so sweet. I mean, we've done prayer walks in that auditorium, laying hands on seats, saying, Lord, I don't know who's sitting in this seat, but you do. And just praying over that seat, you know. And so, like, when I get to hear stories of how, you know, there's 1,400 people in the room. And over and over, people tell me of the personal touch that the Lord had on them that day. It's overwhelming.
I know you prayed over my seat. I felt it. I felt it from the minute I walked in and those stage lights came up. You know, stage lights mean everything to me. I love stage. And when those stage lights came up, it was what I saw in my head. All those years. And I feel that the Lord has redeemed the years the locusts have eaten. And I'm so grateful.
Oh, I'm so grateful too. Well, okay. So I'm going to ask you a couple questions, because this whole season on the podcast, I truly believe that the Lord wants to teach us how to walk alongside people that are hurting. And it's because he, when his children hurt, he hurts, and he can send us to be his hands and feet alongside of people. So tell our listeners, you know, in your season of suffering, what was helpful to you?
Well, my Gail, who could empathize.
For sure.
So
she could empathize until a point, and then at some point she was like,
tough love. So that was helpful.
A friend of knowing, like, how, like, okay, tough love doesn't start day one.
No. And she was, you know, I think she listened to me for 6 to 8 weeks. It was a considerable amount of time. So it was, she didn't just.
Maybe the Lord told her this time.
I'm sure he told her a lot of things. I'm sure she has since died, and I miss her greatly. But yeah, tough love, it was very helpful to me. I wouldn't recommend tough love right off, you know, right when someone's, you know,
discerning with the Lord on
And there's a difference between sympathy and empathy. And people were, you know, the empathy that Gail possessed was very helpful. What wasn't helpful, was silence and proximity friendships, as I've come to call them, meaning that friends were friends that I thought were family, were only friends based on the proximity of working together in that church. And maybe I've come to realize they didn't know what to say. Mm-hmm. They truly didn't know what to say, but they couldn't even say thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for the 9 years.
Or like,
yeah,
can we take you to dinner? Like, yeah. I mean, you know, it's like,
yeah,
we just want to share some table fellowship with you.
Can we do that? But he, when we, during the church plant phase, we did have some friends slowly start to come back toward us. Mm-hmm. They were not the friends I would have guessed that would have come to us. There was this one family that during our ministry with that church, they came maybe once, twice a month. They slid in on the back row. They left. But they became our staunchest defenders.
Wow.
And loved us unconditionally. Hmm. And she loved to laugh. And that laughter was very cathartic.
Yeah. So helpful to be able to laugh again. Yeah.
Very helpful. But I think people were silent because they didn't know what to say. Mm-hmm. And I have been in positions
like
that.
But don't you think sometimes,
that.
Like, yes, sometimes we don't know what to say. But to say that, like, I don't know what to say.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. It helps you to not, I don't.
Yeah, I'm not giving them a pass, but they could have at least said, or sent a card and said, we're sorry or something.
Yeah.
A wonderful thing did happen is we had a young couple that lived next to us.
I was going to say, you're about to tell the story about your neighbor, aren't you?
Yes.
And so I want to just interrupt you for a second and say part of what we are talking with every single guest is how can you testify to God's goodness, you know, as you look back on your season of suffering. And this story, oh my goodness, it encapsulates.
It does.
Like the presence of God, and that you can testify to his goodness and his faithfulness. So yeah, she's about to tell you something. And I want you to just, for all of us to remember that the Lord is, his spirit is going to prompt us in ways that sometimes don't make sense, but it makes sense to him. So tell us what, so there's a young couple that they live across the street next door.
They live next door.
Okay.
And we, a month before we got fired, we had to buy a new car and we don't buy new cars. Yeah. We keep them and drive them till the wheels fall off. Mm-hmm. But we bought a new car so that our son could have my car. And, then we get fired. So we don't have a job. And I told my husband, give it back. You know, he said, well, I'm not going to give it back. It's going to ruin our credit. And I didn't know how we were going to make the car payment. Yeah. And so this young couple lived next door and we had invited them to church and they came once or twice, but they didn't, it wasn't for them. Mm-hmm. And, so our doorbell rings and it's this young couple. Mm-hmm. And they have this envelope for us, and it's getting close to Christmas, and they say, we are sorry. We heard that Lonnie lost his job, and we wish we could do more. Mm-hmm. And when they left, we opened the envelope, and it was the exact amount as our car payment.
I mean,
it was our car payment
for
that month. And what's interesting is that couple moved. And when they moved, they found a church home, and they are very active in a church community now. But it was God's provision. And so it reminds me that whenever I feel prompted to do something, and I don't know why, I was prompted to say hello to this neighbor down the street. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to because she bought the house out from under our college friends who were trying to buy the house. And I saw her out working in the yard and the Lord said, say hello to her. And I said, I'm not doing it, not doing it. He said, say hello to her. So I said, your yard looks nice. And to make a long story short, she turned around and she's a believer and they go to the hills. Of course. She's wonderful. I love her to death. And it just goes to show, you know, speak to that person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cause sometimes it is put some money in an envelope.
Yeah.
And sometimes it is say hello to somebody who needs a hello, or like, I think we can even be, you know, out at a restaurant and be prompted to tip way more than what we would have. Or, I mean, it's just like, he knows what his children need. And it, sometimes it's money, sometimes it's emotional support, sometimes it's belonging. I mean, you know, it's just all the things that he knows that we need. Yeah. And he wants us, you know.
He's opened my eyes.
Yeah.
And would I ever want to go through that again? No. Mm-hmm. But I would go through it in a heartbeat mm-hmm. to have the relationship with Jesus Christ that I have now. Because it, no, I'm not enough, mm-hmm. but I am because of him.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. that's everything.
Mm-hmm. That's the most amazing thing in sitting in these conversations, Lynn, is that most people will say what you just said. I would go through it again because of the intimacy that I have with Jesus. And I am more confident in who he is, that he delights in me, that he has plans for me. He had, you know, it's just this overwhelming confidence because they were, you were desperate for the presence of God.
Yeah.
And the presence of God surrounded you. And now you get to be that story and that encouragement to somebody who's entering the chapter of devastation, right?
Yes. Like, Yes.
It's overwhelming.
And my prayer is that every member, which I'm just a church member mm-hmm. now, mm-hmm. so it's on me too.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Treats the staff mm-hmm. and understands the staff mm-hmm. and gives them the benefit of the doubt. Mm-hmm. And I hope and pray that we do better with that.
Yeah.
I have seen churches do better with that. The mm-hmm. Hills does better with that. Mm-hmm. The church that my son preaches for does mm-hmm. fabulous with that. Mm-hmm. And that's my prayer for anyone who decides to go into ministry. It's a hard, mm-hmm. it's a hard life.
Yeah. And the fact that your son is a preacher today, like, I mean, you know, yeah. like, darkness cannot overcome the light.
Right.
Like there, you know, he is a redeeming God. He is a restorative God.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
I'm so thankful that you were willing to share so transparently. Yeah. I think it's going to be a very helpful conversation to a lot of people.
I hope so. Mm. I pray so. Thank you for mm-hmm. having me.
Absolutely. And will you tell our listeners about that verse you quoted a little bit ago, Joel, from
Joel 2:25.
Mm-hmm. Will you tell us about that? And then will you close us in a prayer specifically for people who are in the middle of that devastating chapter?
I think that when we were fired, we lost more than our financial security.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. We lost our purpose. Mm-hmm. And my husband lost all those years of, I mean, he has a master's in theology. Mm-hmm. So he had trained and mm-hmm. we'd spent money mm-hmm. on that. And I felt all of that was for naught. Mm-hmm. And then we did flounder around maybe 5 years more. And I feel like we lost some of our best years.
Mm-hmm.
Those 50s to 60s are like your go get them years, you know, set you up for retirement. But I have discovered this trust in the Lord and this verse in Joel 2:25, where he says, I will repay the years the locusts have mm-hmm. eaten. Mm-hmm. And when locusts, I grew up on a farm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We had grasshoppers, not locusts, but they could come in and destroy a crop in one day.
Mm-hmm.
And,
not an easy fix.
Not an easy fix. And for the Lord to restore that is, I'm so grateful.
Mm-hmm.
So grateful. Mm-hmm. And I want to encourage anybody who feels that they've been destroyed, that there is greater is he who is in us
mm-hmm.
than he is in the world.
Amen. Amen.
God, you're so good. You're so good to pursue us, even when we selfishly set off on our own, and we feel so self-sufficient and smug in our own abilities, and you are still with us,
mm-hmm.
walking through that season, and you can see the roadblock that's coming ahead long mm-hmm. before we do, And you can say, you go that way, baby, but it's going to be the hard way. Mm-hmm. And when we run into this huge change, this turning point in our lives, and it sends us in a spiral, you're in that spiral with us, and that you fight for us, and that you walk beside us, Lord. Thank you. Thank you for walking beside me. And I pray anybody that's listening, let them feel you walking beside them. Thank you so much for loving us. Thank you so much for the church and its flawed, broken people. It's in your Son's name I pray. Amen.
Amen.